Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking about why you should retire on the reg with Jillian Johnsrud.
You know, I think one of the biggest hurdles to overcome here in the United States, but not just like in our country, but also even for regular listeners of the podcast, is the word retirement. Because like, what do you think of when you hear that someone is retiring? Like, I know I think of someone who's maybe a bit older. They're at least past their prime. They've put in several decades of hard work, and now they're just totally hanging it up. And then on top of that, like, if you attempt to picture yourself in that situation, I think it's often so far away that it's difficult to even have any connection to that future version of yourself. But these are the types of problems that our friend Jillian loves to help walk folks through. She writes over at retireoften.com. She hosts a podcast by the same name. And as a mother of a bunch of children, Jillian herself grew up in poverty. She wants folks to know that mini retirement is more of a possibility than you think. And so we're excited to talk about retiring on the reg. We're excited to talk about sabbaticals with Jillian today. Jillian, thank you for joining the podcast.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks.
We're excited to have you back. We were just talking about how you were, I think, our first for real guest on How to Money back in the day. This was many, many years
ago. Way back when.
Yeah. So it's fun to get to talk to you again like this. But the first question...
We won't link to that episode. Right.
Because I'm sure Jillian had a lot of good things to say, but...
Yeah. I'm sure she did, but just given the awkwardness... Man, we were so fresh and green at that point that it pains me to even think about that conversation.
So 100% true. So, Jillian, I don't even remember what you said when we asked you this question, and I'm pretty sure we were asking this question even if...
I don't even know if we were.
I don't even know. Yeah. But the question we ask now, everybody who comes on the show, is what's your craft beer equivalent? What is it that you are spending more money on than some people would think is sane while you're being smart and saving and investing for your future at the same time?
Yeah, that's gardening. It's plants. I go to nurseries and Home Depot and Lowe's, and it's like, it's pretend money. It might as well be Monopoly money. I don't even think of it as real. The only limitation that I put on myself when it comes to plants is I have to eventually be able to plant them in the ground. So like, my physical labor is kind of the parameters of how many plants I purchase. It's also my stress purchasing. Like, if I'm having a really bad week, I go and buy seeds online, or I order trees. It's also kind of my impulse stress purchase.
So speaking of seeds, have you ever heard of or ordered from or been to, I think it's called Bakersfield Seed Bank or something like that? It's out in California. And literally, Kate and I were getting into gardening when we were out there on a road trip. And it was literally an old-timey bank. It's like this, like picture Gringotts. That they converted into a seed bank, and it was
goblins run things there too. Or not?
Yeah, goblins with green thumbs, but they've got like a lot of heirloom varieties and stuff like that.
I was on my phone yesterday, and my mom's like, "Are you looking at sheds?" I was like, "No, this is my secret Instagram account that is just entirely plants and gardeners. That's all I've curated over here."
I love it. Okay, I feel like at least my wife. And you, Jillian, could talk about plants all day long.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I certainly help her out. I dig some of the bigger holes. But we're going to talk about retiring. And let's start with definitions. Retiring often. That is such a passion of yours. But what exactly is it? Like, what do you define as, A, the frequency of retiring? And, how do you define mini retirement specifically?
Especially because vacations, right?
Is that a mini retirement?
Yeah. So I have kind of three parameters for what classifies as a mini retirement, and I use the terms interchangeably, whether it's mini retirement, sabbatical, career break, hiatus, all of them are good. But the three things is that it's a month or longer, you're stepping away from your primary career to focus on something that really matters to you. And if you have those three elements, for my own personal definition, I consider that a mini retirement.
Okay. So a vacation typically in the U.S. at least is like a week, once a year, maybe twice a year if you're one of the lucky folks. We Matt and I lament about the statistics that most people don't take all their vacation time. It's really sad. And if it's a short period of time, that typically means that you're not disconnecting from work in the way you need to kind of reset your brain and get some actual rest. So is that part of why the month is such an important parameter, or month or longer?
Yeah, there's a kind of physical downshift to help people get into that state of rest. And I find when people are really burned out, you know, it's adrenaline and it's cortisol and they're running at this heightened state. And just like taking caffeine, the minute you stop drinking your coffee, the caffeine does not leave your system. You know, there's a time period before you kind of start to settle down. And it's the same with work. The minute you walk out of the office, you're not completely self-regulated. So I find usually around week two or week three, people really start to relax and settle in. But a month is also enough time to do something really significant and interesting and meaningful with your time.
So first of all, I love that you've defined the fact that there's like a half-life to your work when you step away from it, just like there is with caffeine. But on your podcast, like, you've interviewed a whole lot of folks about this. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, like, what have those folks mentioned as being, I guess, the best part of their time stepping away? Or maybe could you share some good just encouraging or inspirational examples of what some folks were able to accomplish, or maybe some life decisions that were made, or maybe they found themselves at a fork in the road? I would love for you to share some examples from the folks that you've talked with on your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I have my podcast. I do one-on-one and group coaching, so I get to have lots and lots of these conversations. And I always encourage people to pick kind of three intentions or three goals for their time, because there can be a temptation of, I have this huge backlog of things and I'm going to accomplish 30 different things during this time off. And because you don't have that focus, none of it really feels like you made good progress or really significant. So pick kind of three. I would say the top ones are extended travel, you know, things that you can't really do in a 4-day or 7-day vacation. I met a couple once who were biking through Croatia. Like, an amazing trip, but it's not a 4-day weekend trip. extended travel time, doing something really cool and interesting with their kids, having real quality time. You know, I did a 10-week trip in a pop-up camper through 10 national parks with my kiddos a few years ago. They're, again, not something I can fit into 2 weeks vacation, but really significant. In America, recovering from burnout, rest. Burnout's a massive issue. So that hits the top of a lot of people's priority. Focusing on their health, whether that's losing weight or training for a marathon or even their mental health, you know, trying to go to therapy and get some of that stuff unpacked can be really helpful. A lot of people use it for a career transition too. You know, they're in that midpoint of their career where they're like, wait, am I really going to do this for the rest of my life? Like, do I have another 20 years of this in me? But when you're burned out and when you're overwhelmed with work, it's really hard to imagine what else is even out there. What else might you enjoy? And so they need kind of that decompression time to recover from burnout, to just have the creativity to explore new options.
So you kind of hinted at our work-obsessed culture. And it's just kind of a barrier, I would think, just convincing people that this is a good idea. When we're on this kind of hamster wheel, merry-go-round, it's kind of hard to just jump off. So how do you find that as an obstacle, trying to help people understand that this is a necessity in the first place?
You know, I think a lot of people intuitively know that they need a break or that they want a break. It's not hard to convince someone of like, hey, would you like to spend a month in France? Or, you know, do you want to bike ride across the country or build out your garden for a month? You know, whatever people are passionate about. And the reality is, with our modern work culture, those hobbies, those interests, those things that we want to pursue, those things that matter to us, sometimes get entirely squeezed out of life. There's just not enough time. There's not enough hours in the day. There's not enough vacation days to do those in meaningful ways, which starts to exasperate this problem in that our work occupies so much of our life that it becomes so much of our identity. And it's tough to build an identity outside of work.
I completely agree. We talk about this all the time, how, gosh, this makes me even think of something I read recently too about work crushes and how they're like very common, because of course, when you are spending so much time at work, it's like you have individuals that you're drawn to, but that's like a whole nother conversation.
there's usually rules about that, not dating in the workplace. Yeah. And people are like, what am I supposed to do? This is where I'm spending most of my life.
You're spending all your time there. And so it makes sense that like relationally and emotionally you feel pulled in that direction. But of course, when it comes to your skill sets and the things that you are spending your time doing, it makes sense that you get really good at doing your job. And so it's hard to disentangle like our identity from the work that we're doing. But like, I think one of the reasons folks have a hard time pulling away is because they're practically thinking, well, if I prioritize a mini retirement, that's going to hurt my career. It's going to hurt my earning potential. Mm-hmm. What would you say to somebody who's making that argument? Because I don't know, maybe I'm leading the witness here, but I almost feel like that there's an argument to be made for the opposite, that perhaps, because I mean, you've already mentioned how they can foster career transition, but just talk to us about that, about career potential or just the career path that someone might be on and trying to escape that hamster wheel.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is a little counterintuitive, but over and over, I've seen the pattern of a mini retirement accelerating their professional growth and accelerating their financial progress, which does feel a little counterintuitive. But on the professional side, you know, I think it's pretty well known that one of the best ways to get a 20-30% raise is to switch jobs. And a mini retirement provides the perfect motivation and kind of the perfect rest opportunity in between those jobs. So especially if you're early in your career and you're going to be switching companies every 3 or 4 years, that's a perfect little moment in time that you can take a month or two to focus on these other areas of your life. And there's a really interesting phenomenon that I never would have guessed until I started having hundreds of conversations with people about this, but it makes people really uncomfortable when you're not working. There's something about the work culture that it just feels wrong. You not working, them still working and you not working is very, very uncomfortable. And sometimes it's subconscious, but when you step away from a job and you don't jump into a brand new job, a whole bunch of people start trying to get you a job. They try to like fix this. Whether you want them to or not, early retirees experience this all of the time when like everyone in their network's trying to suck them back into corporate life. But there's ways that you can foster that as well. And oftentimes people get much better jobs, I think, because that cognitive loop is open. And when jobs come open, they might not think of you if you're happy at a company. But if they're like, oh, isn't Joloff doing that thing? What's he doing? He's in like Europe, right? He probably wants to get back to work. Maybe we should give him a call. And so you can kind of encourage this natural phenomenon. And people oftentimes get much more interesting jobs that they're better suited for, and better paying jobs. I hung out with a friend in DC who had just finished a mini retirement. And two cool things about this story. One, when he came back to work to his new job, he had a 50% raise over his previous job.
Wow.
He had taken a year off. His sign-on bonus covered like half of the cost of his mini retirement. But the other thing was interesting, during that time off, he rested, he recovered, he did hobbies, all of that, but he also explored other career options and then started taking classes and getting the certifications that he would need to pivot into a new career, and did it well enough that he got a job offer in this new career. Ultimately, he decided to go back to his previous career, but he's like, yeah, you know, I might be here for a year or two, and then maybe I will switch careers. Like, now I know I can do this. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Kind of proved it to himself a little bit.
Yeah, and I love what you said, too, just how, well, first of all, it would be me making the calls to Joel, just like, dude, you haven't showed up to work in like 3 months. Like, what's the deal here, buddy?
And I wouldn't take his calls.
But that being said, when he did come back, like, how interesting of a conversation would we have? I guess I like the part of it too, where it's almost like this forbidden fruit that before I didn't really care, but now that I can't have you, I want you. It's like we've got to.
Almost like kind of how comedians and musicians need to live life in order to make good content, right?
Yes.
Like, and I think the same is true for like life, right? To be appealing in so many of those ways, you have to go live a little, or you just become the person who knows how to do the basic math and not kind of the interesting creative parts of a job. So I see a lot of benefit in that. I'm curious too, Jillian, you what about our consumption culture? How does that fuel our inability to take time off? Because think about it, like, we see the stats, people living paycheck to paycheck, even people who make six plus figures, is just kind of the fact that we don't know how to rein in our spending. Does that prevent us from having some of that financial flexibility to take an extended period of time off?
So one of the things that I talk about in my group coaching is this time luxury continuum. And the phenomenon that if you have less time, you tend to want more luxury. But if you have more time, you don't really need as much luxury. And so I think it ties in with the consumption, in that when we have so little time, we have to spend so much money on everything, on having groceries delivered, on convenience food, on ordering new clothes online. Like, every part of our life gets more expensive. And when we travel, it gets more expensive. To do, you know, a 5-day trip to Paris for a family of four is a huge cost. Probably a similar cost for a family of four to live in France for a month. And so oftentimes when you have more time, things aren't as expensive. And so sometimes people try to extrapolate their vacation cost. Well, a vacation cost me $5,000 a week. A month-long mini retirement will cost me $20,000. It will not cost you $20,000. Like, because you don't have to rush. You don't have to see three sites every day. You don't have to eat out three meals a day for the next 30 days in a row. Most people don't want to eat out 90 meals in a row. So the cost comes down because you can enjoy all of the other elements of life.
I totally agree. And I think there's something to be said, too, in the same way that we get sucked into the work, and that keeps us from being able to realize what it is that's making us happy. Sometimes I think we get sucked into the same consumption traps as well that doesn't allow us to look up from from the grind that we're living in day in and day out. Jillian, you, as well as a lot of our friends, Joel and I, we're all kind of a part of the FIRE community, whether or not we're tangent to it or fully in it or not. I guess maybe it depends on the year. But I think there are a lot of folks within that community that might say that a mini retirement, well, hey, that's gonna delay my ability to achieve full financial independence, fat FIRE. What would you say to those folks who are, instead of looking at retirement at age 65, you know, they've got the noble task of maybe going after it by the age of 40 or 50, but they're so fixated on their number. What would you say to those folks?
Yeah, this is a common hesitation. And honestly, I think mini retirements are the perfect complement to retiring early. And so there's two kind of ways to look at this. One, if you are early in your financial independence journey, like I said, in the three qualifiers for what a mini retirement is, one of them is stepping away from your primary career. That doesn't mean that you have to do nothing. There were too many retirements that we used to buy a rental property and to renovate it. That was a big undertaking for us. And it wasn't something that we were able to do alongside our 9-to-5 careers. So we took these two small gaps, and that massively accelerated our path to FI. Some people use their mini retirement to start a side hustle, to start a side project, to start kind of that business that they've been thinking about, but they just didn't have the bandwidth to do it after work. And so you can create additional sources of income. So especially if you're early in your career or early in your financial journey, I would consider it doesn't have to be a beach in the Caribbean for a month. Like there's lots of different things you can do with this time. But the second group, if you're, because I work with a lot of people who are like 70% the way to FI, 80, 90, and it's like, oh, do I really want to take a break? I could just like keep my head down, push through for a couple more years, and then I'm 100% there. But achieving financial independence is a little bit like driving down the interstate 80 miles an hour. If you pop that thing in reverse all at once, it's a little bit of a tailspin. There's a whole bunch of things that you maybe have not practiced or have kind of set aside in your pursuit of financial independence. Maybe some of those relationships, maybe some of those hobbies, those interests, that travel, you've kind of postponed thinking, well, I'll just really do all of that when I get to FI. And the reality is, it's tough to change, like to significantly change one thing in your life. It takes a lot of work and effort, and it's not always enjoyable. But if your plan is, I'm going to change 15 things in my life as soon as I become FI, it's a rough transition, and it's very discouraging for a lot of people. The failure rate of hobbies. You know, you try a new hobby and not all of them work out. Not all of them are what you expect. Same with volunteering. So you go from a career where you're very proficient and really good at everything and very successful to a life where you're like mostly failing at stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, it brings up, you know, whether you retire at 65, whether you retire early, sometimes even during a mini retirement, one of the things I warn people about is it allows you to unpack baggage. So it's like if your kitchen's really messy, but you go to work all day and you don't have to look at the messy kitchen, it's easy to pretend it doesn't even exist. During your time off, now you just stare at that messy kitchen all day long. And so it's an opportunity to clean that stuff up. But I know a lot of people who worked so hard for 10 or 15 years, head down, push through to retire early, only 6 months or a year later to be like, this sucks, I'm going back to work. And it's like, if you would have practiced retirement periodically throughout the process, that transition not only would be easier, but it would be so much more successful.
I guess sometimes it's easier to do the thing that you're really good at that you kind of dislike.
Yes, exactly.
To try to practice at things you're not great at. It just
like nobody likes to suck at anything,
right?
You know, like, like so much of our lives.
You've
I feel like
you've gotten better at a cappella music though, Matt.
But I suck. No. I don't sing. But like, yeah, like it goes back to the doing the things that you're proficient in. Nobody. It's really difficult. It's humbling. Like you have to get over that ego to say, you know what. Even though I'm so good at this thing and I make a lot of money, you're like hitting the reset mm-hmm. button, and you're basically starting over at beginner level, novice status on a bunch of other different things. And I think a lot of folks would much rather continue to be proficient and at the sort of acclaimed expert level at the thing that they know and love, but that they're beginning to resent.
Thing that the people around them value too, because in this culture, that is what gets put on a pedestal, is
professional
success in the workplace, workplace environment, more money in the bank account. And so it's like, cool, let me keep doing the thing that everyone else thinks is great, that I'm actually pretty good at, and I feel good about myself. Jillian, we have more questions we're going to discuss about retiring often, and how we actually, what are the specifics of how we actually pull that off? Do we have to like put in our resignation tomorrow? We'll talk about that and more right after this.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
And now, a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's PolicyGenius.com.
We are back from the break talking with our friend Jillian Johnsrud. And Jillian, like so far, like in the first portion of the episode, you've made a really good case, I think, for why folks should be considering mini retirements. But let's talk about more of the nuts and bolts, I guess the practical side of how we go about doing this thing. So let's say that someone's convinced. How does one get prepared? One does not simply walk into Mordor, right? How do you take off a significant chunk of time? Is this something where someone should just say, yeah, like hand in their 2 week notice. Like, should you just straight up quit, or maybe should someone try to negotiate a leave of absence? I guess what I'm asking here is, how should they negotiate the relationship that they have with their current employer?
So there's two options. If you want to come back to your employer, which honestly, I will always recommend starting small, because it's the easiest step and it'll give you that confidence and clarity to kind of go bigger next time. But a month off, negotiated from your employer, go do something cool, go do something awesome, come back refreshed and happy, is probably the easiest thing to negotiate. So if you want to come back, I usually recommend if it's like 1 to 3 months is what people can typically negotiate off, partly because that's in the framework of typical leave of absence. You know, if someone has a heart attack, or if someone has a baby, or, you know, most companies are somewhat equipped to handle a 1 to 3 month absence. Now, if you want to take a year off, 2 years off, you might not be able to negotiate that. You might have to separate from the company. Although I know a lot of people, actually, one of my client's siblings was kind of inspired after my client made some progress and was a doctor and went in and just quit. She was like, I need a year off. I'm out of here. Like, peace out. And they were like, no. Okay, how about you leave? And then in a year, you just come back. Just please come back. Whatever you do, just please come back whenever you're ready. And so sometimes you can kind of negotiate this understanding that a job is available when you return. But either way, I always encourage, even if you're going to separate, do an exit negotiation, which we can kind of get into how to structure that. But yeah, shorter, if you can start with a shorter leave of absence, go for it. 1 to 3 months, negotiate that. You might need to separate if it's a longer leave of absence.
Are you typically still getting paid? I guess it depends on the length of time and what you negotiate. So if you're like gone for a month, are you able to say, listen, I'm going to come back, I'm going to be rested and refreshed, I'm going to be kicking butt. So you should probably pay me for this month off. Or is it like half and half? Like, how do you negotiate sort of the pay for when you're going to be gone?
So I always encourage people, as like a rule of thumb, to look at what their leave of absence pay policy is currently. So if people get zero pay for vacation or maternity leave, you're probably not going to be able to negotiate a paid leave of absence. So you can start with an unpaid leave of absence. Some companies will do paid, or sometimes, so there's an HR logistics issue in the background, and of your health insurance, your 401k contributions, your dental, you know, all of that, where does that money come from? So some companies like Bank of America offer 25% pay, which essentially helps cover all of your automatic deductions.
That's cool to know. There's some companies who just kind of have that structured into the way they do business with their employees. Okay, what about healthcare? Because this is one of those things. Do you, if you quit altogether, you might not have healthcare at all. Are we talking about then your income drops? Should you go on healthcare.gov and get a plan there? What's the best way to make sure that you have coverage, especially catastrophic coverage, while you're on your break?
Yeah, absolutely. Have healthcare coverage. Like, this is not the time to be like, oh, I'll skip it. Definitely get healthcare coverage. There are, in the U.S., you know, this is kind of a U.S. problem. In the U.S., there's 6 or 7, 8 kind of different routes you can go. Typically, if people are looking at a 2, 3, 4 month mini retirement, I generally suggest COBRA. Just because the ease of use. It might not be the cheapest option, but you get to keep all your same doctors, you get to stay in the same network. It kind of rolls over seamlessly. If you're looking at a longer mini retirement, you know, 8 months, a year, then looking at the exchange is a good option. But there's also other options. So sometimes if there's a married couple, one of them could stay employed while the other one, you know, does their mini retirement, and they swap back and forth. I had clients who, one of the spouses had a very severe, expensive ongoing medical condition. And they're like, we have to have insurance all the time. And so we just came up with a plan where, like, you'll swap back and forth, each of you getting some time. If, you know, let's say both people want to take a year off, maybe one of them works part-time, you know, like I said, I'm obsessed with gardening and plants. If I was at a stressful corporate job and wanted a year off, and I could go to the local nursery and work part-time and water plants, like, that is my dream anyways. All I want to do is be outside and water plants and talk to people about plants. Like,
oh, I thought you were going to say talk to plants.
Both. I talk to my plants as well. But that could be an option, you know, to where you have this flexibility, you have the ability to do more trips and things. So there's some options you can kind of piece together. And people are always really nervous about it. I always encourage people, like, take an hour and do the research, because it's usually those unknown pieces that create that hesitation and get people stuck. But see what's out there, and you don't have to decide forever. That's the other great thing I love about COBRA. If you're overwhelmed, if you cannot figure out healthcare, start with COBRA. You don't have to stay on it the whole time. You can do it for 2 or 3 months and then decide, actually, I want to switch to the exchange now, or I want to work part-time, or kind of come up with a new option.
It makes me think back to when I worked in the corporate world for like 2 years, and once my wife and I were looking to start our own business, Jillian, I had looked into what healthcare was going to cost, and what I realized was that even if I was going to stay with my company, I would have dropped the group health insurance, because it was actually more expensive, because we were young and healthy, than having gone out on our own and paying for healthcare.
This was a different, ourselves. Simpler times.
I know.
In the healthcare space, too.
But what I love what you said there, though, as well, about actually going and working at a nursery. Like, that's a way that you can offset the cost of a mini retirement. And so let's talk about, I guess, budgeting for a mini retirement or a sabbatical and what that entails. Because so by working a part-time job, not only does that offset your healthcare costs, but you've got a little bit of money trickling in. And so that kind of helps to offset the missed income. But what about, like, how else can you financially prepare for a sabbatical, whether you're talking about on the income side of the equation or even on the expenses side of the equation?
I think the planning stage isn't too complicated. It starts with knowing your baseline budget. How much does it cost you to live for a month? And then kind of itemizing, what is the cost of this thing I want to do? And I have a couple exercises I walk people through of, like, how to decide what the next mini retirement should be. But if all things are equal, especially if you're early in your financial journey and you have 20 different ideas, start with the least expensive one. You know, it'll help you make really good financial progress. You don't have to start with, you know, I want to do 120 day around the world cruise. This might not be the one you do at 32. Like, maybe save that to when you're 82. And the first one is like camping, you know, an American road trip or hiking through Europe or something. So there's that part. And there's, once you start to, I encourage people, like, list out all of the elements of what the thing they want to do during their mini retirement would cost. And that way you can kind of start to find creative ways to pay for that. So if there's flights, you know, maybe you do credit card points to help cover the flights, but lots of different things. You can do the research to figure out, how can I bring those costs down? What are some alternatives? You can crowdsource those ideas, or even, like, enlist some help. You know, when it comes Christmas and birthday time, if you have, like, a backpack that you really want, or, you know, a piece of luggage you really want, or travel books or whatever that is, you know, put that on the wish list. So on the budget side, for money savvy people, that's usually not the biggest stress. But there are lots of ways on the income side to bring in some extra cash during your mini retirement that could make it, you know, a little less stressful. Because, like I said, if someone's used to earning and investing and saving, and if they've been in that mode for a long time, not earning, spending down, selling investments is a little stressful at first. Mm-hmm. It takes some practice. And so there are some things, you know, when we travel about half the year in an RV around the country with all of our kiddos. We rent out our house while we're gone. So we rent out our house for about $2,400. Our travel expenses are about the same. And so it costs us the same to live at home or to travel full time. So we don't actually really have many additional costs to traveling. And so that's a really, if you want to travel, it's a really kind of low barrier to rent out your house. You don't have to necessarily have rentals. You don't even have to do an Airbnb. We do long-term, but it could create a lot of income that could offset those additional costs.
I like that. I feel like kind of what you've referred to in the last few answers is thinking outside the box. I think there can be roadblocks, right? Like, oh, healthcare. How am I going to do that one? I guess I'm just not going to take a mini retirement. Or, what am I going to do with the house? Who's going to take care of it? And like, actually, maybe you make money on it. Like, these are
somebody's going to pay me to take care of my house for me.
Right. And it's so easy, I think, though, to let those things like the mortgage or the healthcare be these roadblocks to doing the thing that's going to be incredibly life-giving, potentially beneficial to your future career, but more than anything, beneficial to you as a human.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me this. Self-employed folks, that's a little different, right? So we were talking about breaking free from an employer, but if you run your own business, it can feel even harder to step away, I think. And that's one of your tenets for a mini retirement is that you have to leave your day job. So can you like participate in it a little bit, or is it like, no, you got a cold turkey, do this thing. Your business needs to be run by somebody else. You need to put it on autopilot for a bit. How do you help self-employed folks think through taking a mini retirement?
Yes. I think a lot of 9-to-5 employees have this assumption of, oh my gosh, it would be so much easier if I was the boss. I would just say yes to me. And the reality is it's so much more complicated. It's so much harder, and it's scarier for a lot of people. While it can be scary for employees, like, what if I don't get hired again? It has a different level of fear of, what if the thing I've spent years building explodes while I'm gone,
just collapses.
And I come home to like a pile of rubble?
Yeah.
Like, that's a different level of fear. But there also is so many benefits. So to tackle your first question of, do you have to walk away completely? Honestly, for people's first mini retirement, I don't suggest it. I suggest shrinking your responsibilities to where you can accomplish them in maybe 5, maybe 10 hours a week, trying to get closer to 5. But the reality is, when you're building out better systems, when you're building out better processes, when you're hiring people, it's really tough to replace you 100%. Like, there's more risk and like 10 times the effort to replace you 100% versus replacing you 80%. And so I always encourage people, like, what's the 80% that you could automate, or you could get off of your plate, or you could delegate to someone else? And what's the 20% that like is really essential that you do? And just focus on that during your mini retirement. They tend to be more successful, and it's easier to get it prepared. And then, you know, retiring often, the more often people do this, the better you'll get. It's kind of like, people ask me, like, is it hard to rent out your house? Yes. It's super hard the first time. You have to declutter everything. You have to clean everything. You have to like pack stuff up. But every time you do it, you come back to a cleaner, more prepared, more organized home. And the next time, it's less hard and it takes less time to prepare. And it's the same thing for self-employed. The more often you do it, the stronger and smoother and like more efficient your business becomes, the better trained your employees become. And it does get easier. So you might get to like, I've logged off, I've thrown away my cell phone, you will hear nothing from me for 6 weeks. But I recommend starting with like 5 hours a week check-in.
Not just like, it is a big thing to do to take a mini retirement, but what's even bigger is taking an actual retirement. Now, I love that, like, one of the recurring themes to what I hear you saying is that you're trying this out. It's not going to be perfect the first time. And the more you do it, the better you're going to get. And I can't help but to think about the sort of like, you barely touched on the selling of assets, right? Drawing down of principal. And that, for so many retirees, is an incredibly difficult thing. What an awesome way to try that thing out by...
Yes.
And maybe you're not... Obviously, you're not paying penalties and taxes on by, you know, withdrawing money out of your retirement early, but even not contributing to those retirement accounts, it does this mental shift where it feels like you're not making progress because maybe you're measuring progress incorrectly. Maybe you're going about it the wrong way. And I like that, whether you're talking about being self-employed or even retirement accounts. Yeah, there's just a low risk to giving this a shot at a reasonable level, at least. But in all throughout your answers and just kind of how you've talked about this, you've referred to your kids. And so we've got a few questions about whether or not mini retirement is possible with kids. I mean, obviously it is because you've done it. But we'll get to that and more right after this. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we're back. We're still talking about retiring often. Why you who are listening right now, you should probably retire regularly, more consistently. It's not all or nothing. It's not, oh, can't wait till I'm 65. Maybe you should retire little bits here and there along the way. And it certainly sounds like an ideal way to live. It's something Matt and I are discussing more and more as business partners and as friends. And so part of the reason we wanted to have Jillian on today was selfish in nature, because what does it look like for us maybe to do this more in our own lives? But Jillian, first, before Matt and I take off for a couple months, I have to know, like, what are the horror stories? What are the worst possible outcomes of retiring often? Do you have any from your own experience or from some of the people that you talk to or work with, like, that have just been like, that's not for me?
I wouldn't say that it's not for them, but there can be legitimate challenges. There are things that are hard and go wrong, and I never sugarcoat that. Like, I think it's really important to kind of know what you're getting into and to know what the challenges might be. But I also always encourage people, like, these are challenges. Like, this is a bridge you're going to have to cross at some point. The only alternative to figuring this stuff out is dying at your desk.
Oh my gosh.
So you either die at your desk or you figure out some of these challenges. So we might as well start small. Like you said, we might as well practice along the way in, like, bite-sized challenges versus okay, now I'm retired for 30 years. Like, I have to take a 30 size bite. But yeah, there's a lot of challenges. Like I mentioned briefly, unpacking baggage. A lot of couples, and this is true whether you're 65 or 25, a lot of couples have more conflict during retirement because they have to stare at the dirty kitchen all day long.
And each other.
Yes.
Well, I think that's the dirty kitchen referring
to. That's my metaphor. That's my metaphor. But both.
That's what you call your husband. Okay.
But I always encourage people like this, while it can be viewed, sometimes people's internal story can be, why the heck did I even take this time off? And why am I spending all this money? And why am I losing all this income just to like fight with my spouse? And that could be the story. Or you could say, you know what? This is the opportunity for us to really focus on this and learn some new skills and figure out our communication and work through this so that we can have decades more being happily married. But that can catch people off guard. Another thing that catches people off guard is if they are severely burned out, they often underestimate the time and the intensity of what that recovery will look like. And it sneaks up on people where their body kind of downshifts, and it's almost like if you've been fasting and then you start eating again, your body all of a sudden feels super hungry and you feel hungry for a really long time. If you've been depriving yourself of rest and recovery, soon as your body realizes, oh, I have access to this, it will feel super tired, and it will feel super tired for a really long time. Mm. And there again, the story people tell themselves, never the helpful story, but it often sounds like, well, maybe I'm just not motivated. Maybe I'm not a productive person. Maybe I'm just lazy. Maybe I can't thrive outside of my 9-to-5. This was a horrible idea. I thought I was going to be able to accomplish all these things, and now I'm just napping and I have no motivation. I should just go back to work because this sucks. When in reality, your body's just trying to get you back to your baseline, and it sees this as the perfect opportunity. So if people kind of go in knowing this might be something that happens and can reframe it of, oh my gosh, my body is really tired. Maybe I should shift my plans, but I'm so grateful I have the ability to give my body what it needs.
Another downside I could see of many retirements, doing them regularly, is being away from community, from family, from some of those, the people that matter most to you, and over an extended period of time. So let's say I'm like taking 4 months off and I'm away from those people for a long time. Like, that is a very grounding thing for me. And I would imagine for a lot of people out there. What does that look like? And what, like, how have you dealt with being removed from your community for an extended period of time as you're enjoying that time with your family, getting off the beaten path and not working nearly to the same degree? Like, are you staying in touch with your community? Are you writing letters? Like, what is, how do you kind of maintain that, cultivate that while you're away?
Yeah. Well, there's two ways to look at this. One, I always encourage people, you don't have to leave for a mini retirement. Like, you can stay home. One summer I took the summer off and I planted a food forest in my backyard. You know, you can play in a band, you can do things locally. So if you don't want to leave your community, you don't have to. But the other side is, if you want to travel, it's actually been massively beneficial for us to be able to connect with extended family, to be able to connect with friends, friends from college, friends from, you know, my husband was in the military. So we have friends all over the country during that season of our life, professional friends. When people only have 14 days of vacation between holidays and birthdays and weddings, there isn't a lot of time left to go visit your cousins or your great aunt or your friends from college. You know, oftentimes we lose some of those connections and we lose some of those relationships. And when you're traveling, it's a great opportunity. You know, we kind of try to plan our trip a little bit around, where are all the people that we haven't gotten to see for a while? And so while, you know, it is important to maintain your connections back home, there might be those more distant connections that you actually have the opportunity to kind of lean into if you are traveling.
I love that. That makes sense to not, you're not, it's not like you're replacing your community, but it's like, hey, how can we strengthen some of these other relationships that we have, or maybe relationships too that we've neglected over the years. But all right, last question, Jillian. I mentioned kids earlier. Obviously, I think a lot of, I mean, the way I'm thinking about this, I'm like, all right, summer breaks. That's an easy mini retirement, right? You've got 2 or 3 months where you can take off. But if you're thinking beyond that, how does that work with schooling? I mean, you're talking about taking months on end off. What does that look like? Are you homeschooling? And then when you come back, are the kids like jumping right back into public schooling? Is there any catching up that has to be done? What does that look like just from a practical standpoint with kids and education?
Yeah, for us, so we live in Montana, so the education piece will be a little bit state specific, but it is pretty easy to find online or talk to, you know, your school's administration to see how they would handle different policies. Ours is if kids are gone for more than a month, they unenroll them. So when we leave, because we like to travel in the winter because I get seasonal depression and Montana is like massively cloudy in the winter. So we travel in the winter. Yeah. So we unenroll them, we homeschool them when we travel, and then when we get back, we re-enroll them and they jump back into school. Sometimes people ask us about our curriculum. It is totally haphazard. It is all over the place. But because all of our kids are moving at their own pace, they tend to massively outpace their peers when they return. So I kind of feel bad. Like, we got back early April this year, so they're going back to school for 2 months, and I kind of feel bad sending them back because they're not going to learn a single thing in the next 2 months. Like, not a lick of information. I'm just sending them back so they can like get back into the rhythm, see their friends, have like build those, you know, community connections again. But yeah, I'm not in any way expecting them to learn new information these last 2 months because they're a grade or two level ahead at this point. But yeah, I would say, you know, kindergarten in Montana through junior high, that's the system and it's pretty easy. It gets a little bit more complicated in high school for a lot of reasons. You know, oftentimes people are like, I don't know if I want to travel when my kids are young. And I get it. It's so much more like physical labor. It's so much more emotional labor to travel with them. But with school and with friends and with activities and hobbies, it's logistically so much easier when kids are younger. I have two in high school now, and it's tricky, and we're having to shift plans and kind of shift gears to accommodate those needs. So I always encourage people, you know, travel while your kids are young, because you just never know. You never know what your kids will want or need once they get into junior high and high school.
Yeah, that's good advice. Jillian, thank you so much for walking us through this. It's given me a lot of food for thought.
Same. Yeah. That last point. I'm like, okay. I totally caught myself in that position of being like, well, the four-year-old can barely hike a couple miles. Like, I want to make, you know, don't you want to go when you can throw down like 5, 6, 7 miles, because I'm thinking national parks. But then, like you said, are they going to want to do that? So it's easy to, selfishly
we'll do it off in the future.
Put ourselves into the position of the questions that we're asking, Jillian.
For sure. Jillian, thank you for joining us. Where can our listeners find out more about you, more about taking mini retirements on the reg?
Like you mentioned, retireoften.com. And I have some worksheets there if you want to start kind of planning what that might look like. Or on social media, I'm at Jillian Johnsrud.
That's right. And we didn't even mention the workbook that you've got out, and you've got a book coming out next year about retiring often. So we'll make sure to link to that when it's available and to your current resources now. Jillian, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, guys. It's wonderful to be back.
Well, Joel, are you convinced? Is it time for us to just hang it up at least for like a month or two? And
I think so. And I think, like, I told Jillian actually right after we got off the call that we were considering something like a 2-week extended thing next June once my wife's graduated, getting her degree as a marriage and family therapist. And then now I'm like, why stop at 2 weeks? Why not make it longer? Why not just lean into that a little bit harder and make it a month and try our first like legit mini retirement? I think you and I we're solid about work-life balance. We're solid about taking time off, but this makes me want to do even more.
Definitely does. The hardest part is going to be you getting her to take a mini retirement when she's just getting started.
I know.
Like that's the, I feel like the difficult part there. But yeah, was that your big takeaway? Or do you have something else that you want to refer to in our conversation with Jillian?
I think my big takeaway was when she said, if you have less time, you want more luxury. And I think it's so the luxury, freaking true.
Luxury time continuum.
Yeah, if you have less time.
They're inverses of each other.
Guess what? You want to pay someone to clean your house. You want to pay someone to mow your lawn. You want to pay someone to deliver the groceries. Everything costs more when you feel like you're strapped for time. You're paying for, you're outsourcing all these services.
If you only have 4 days in Paris to travel because that is the only block of window, or that is the only window of time that you could get away from work, well, guess what? You're going to be paying off the nose to be able to take off during those 4 days, which happens to be when everybody else also wants to take time off and flights are ridiculously expensive. And
That's exactly right.
It compounds. It's everything. Like, literally everything costs more.
Yeah. And so I think, just like what she said, if it's $5,000 for you to take a week vacation, it's not $20,000 for you to take a month-long vacation. In fact, it might be somewhat similar in price because you're going to be doing all these different things with a unique approach. So, yeah, think about that, how being constantly busy is costing you more. And if maybe you had more time in your life, you can enjoy some of those tasks and DIY and save yourself some money. I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, man, I couldn't agree more. So my big takeaway is going to be when she was talking about, we were sort of talking about the nuts and bolts, like the practical side of planning for a sabbatical or a mini retirement. And she basically highlighted that for most folks, it's not too difficult to figure out the financials of it. And so what does that then leave? It's the psychological, the emotional, the emotional, the mental side of things. And like all the numbers part of the equation, like those are all now just excuses, because she said that how you can take 1 hour, do a little bit of digging around and figure out, oh, look, turns out my company already has a policy. It's already spelled out. Or you can spend that hour researching, okay, well, what does it then look like for me to pay for a Cobra? Oh, what does it then look like for me to take that this much time away? How is that going to impact my career? There is so much fear of the unknown, and it keeps us locked into the rut of going in, punching the clock, you know, just doing the same things that we're so used to because we're proficient, we're competent. But also, I think because we're scared, man, I think it's difficult to do something that causes like a little feeling of fear that kind of like sparks up inside of us.
Will I ever get a real job again?
Yes.
There's all these questions that come up. I agree. I think they're these kind of root level questions that are probably really good things for us to sort through, but it's hard to have the time to sort through them if we're, you know, working our butts off.
Exactly.
And one other thing. She mentioned, you know, going to see friends and family and stuff. I thought one other perk of that is often there's a free place to stay when you're doing that. So
it's true.
That can dramatically,
at least for a couple of days,
rekindle some of those. Yeah. They might boot you out. But
you want to be here for how long?
No, I'm on a mini retirement. I don't think you understand. I'll be here for a couple of months. And they're like, oh, sorry. No. But yeah, a few days in a bunch of different places can make for like a really fun trip, I think.
Yeah. All right. Let's tell folks about the beer you and I enjoyed during this episode. Grits and Juice by Carolina. How do you say this?
Barnhouse.
Barnhouse?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Is it like Barnhouse?
Okay. I think it's German, maybe.
Bauernhaus. Did you? I guess you picked this beer up. This is out of Greenville. I've never even heard of them.
Yeah,
surprising. Well, considering how much time I spent in Greenville, South Carolina.
But I've only had a couple beers from them, but this one was by far my favorite that I've had from them.
It was great.
So good.
Super tasty.
The most, one of the most underrated beer styles is when you combine sour and hops together. This beer had both because it was a session IPA that had sour vibes going on with like citrus sour going on, and it was delicious.
It's totally barrel aged too, right? Or no? I don't, because it had like a funkiness going on. Like that made me think of oak. I don't know, but
yeah, no, it did have a funkiness, but I don't know that it was barrel aged.
Okay, nice. I dug it. The Grits and Juice, is that like a Snoop Dogg reference? Gin and juice,
maybe.
I don't know,
but the Southern version.
It had a nice acidity to it with some of that funk, while at the same time having some of that hoppy bitterness on the finish as well. Super tasty. And doubly fun, since I don't think I've ever had a beer by these guys. So
always fun to try a new brewery.
Yeah, glad you're able to pick this one up.
For sure, me too.
Nice. All right, we'll make sure to link to some of Jillian's resources that we talked about here on the podcast. We'll make sure to link to her show as well as her site. You can find that up in our show notes at howtomoney.com.
Stay tuned, because will we be back on Friday with the Friday flight? Or will we be like kicking our feet up somewhere? Who knows? You'll find out in a couple days, I guess. But Matt, that's going to do it for this one. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.